This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening. This is Rock Cash, your host this week on People Speak Radio. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen in by phone calling 760-569-7676, then entering the access code 192919 pound when prompted. If you have a computer or a smartphone, you can go to bbsradio.com, navigate to station 2, click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests. Toll-free, U.S., Canada, 1-888-429-5471. My guests this evening are former Attorney General under the Nixon administration, Ramsey Clark, also the founder of InternationalActionCenter.org. That's IACenter.org. And also joining us is former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, who is an outspoken advocate of peace. They are two people who I admire very much for their courage, bravery, standing up for what's right. Cynthia, Ramsey, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Thank you.
Let's get right down to it. Tell us about your trip to Syria.
Ramsey, why don't you start?
Well, ladies first, but I would if you want me to.
Yeah.
We drove in from Beirut. We'd been at a conference primarily on Syria, actually, in Beirut by peace advocates from the region. And it was a night drive. It was an easy drive. There was no... It's a short drive, actually. It's probably less than 100 miles. And except for the border, there was and some traffic in the evening getting out of Beirut, it was clear sailing. No no security problems, really, and a pretty moonlight night. We got there, went to the hotel, and from there we met with officials and toured the city area primarily, saw conditions. It was peaceful. There was no violence in Beirut at that time, in Damascus, rather. Cynthia, you want to add on to that?
In our car, we were in two separate cars, and in our car, we remarked that there were more people going into Syria than there were coming out of Syria. And that was an interesting observation given what's, you know, sort of happening over here with the news that would lead one to believe that Syria has already become a Libya, but it is not that yet, at least not in Damascus proper.
Not even close.
Okay, so
we're fighting in some areas, but it's quite different than Libya. There's no real ground fighting in Libya as such.
So we're getting false media representation as always.
Well, they say that in war, truth is the first casualty, and the United States has declared war against the Syrian government, which will end up being against the Syrian people for a very long time, because Congress, even when I was in the Congress, there were always sanctions bills that were introduced and passed to sanction Syria. And so even back in those days, before there was any outbreak of hostilities, of kinetic hostilities, there was still hostility toward the Syrian government and the Syrian people, despite what one might say that there's a separation when you impose sanctions on a country that is the people who bear the brunt of those sanctions.
Of course, and my question to you, Cynthia, is why? Why would our government do that, put sanctions on a nation that has done nothing to them?
Well, I think actually Ramsey has a great explanation for the totality of the belligerence of U.S. policy. So I'm going to kick the ball over to Ramsey and let us benefit from his wisdom that he has imparted. Actually, when we were in Beirut, he gave a very moving speech about the U.S. foreign policy.
Ramsey?
Well, the main difference is I've been around longer than Cynthia, so I've watched a lot of misery from U.S. aggression. It takes older people to remember our profound sorrow at the Vietnam War. It was just a tragedy for a lot of our young soldiers, but a tragedy for all the people of Vietnam. And you go there now. I was there twice this year, and 40th anniversary of the Paris Peace Accords. They drove us out, and their country's thriving, except for the continuing problem with Agent Orange, which affects about almost a fourth of the country. And in that area, you don't want to have a pregnancy or a birth because you're going to have a deformed child in all probability. But the country's thriving. We take these countries down one at a time, and Syria seems to be high on the list right now. I've been going through Syria since the early 70s, going through there during the Iranian Revolution, and it was a safe, secure, content country. Shops full of watermelons in the summer and dates and things in the winter, and people were doing good. It's a diverse country. One of its great strengths is its diversity. It's got Sunnis and Shias and Alawites and Druze and Christians of several orders. They've got archbishops from Greek, and they've got three types of archbishops of Christian Orthodox churches in there, and large Christian population. And, you know, during the Iraq War, I was going into Iraq every year from 1990 through invasion 2003, and then about every other year since then. And Syria had a closed border, but its people were very empathetic with the plight of the Iraqi people. Their neighbors got along, common border. And even the lawyers trying the cases after we overthrew the government and indicted former officials, the Iraqi lawyers' families were living in Syria for security, and lawyers would try to go over there whenever they could. And actually, Syria took in more than 1 million Iraqis, though their border and relationships were negligible. And amazingly, they'd open up their homes. They'd make an extra bedroom and have free access to the kitchen, and might be three people in that bedroom, but and might be four or five in some of their bedrooms. But they wanted to share, and they wanted to be neighbors. But finally came serious time to deal with the U.S. geopolitics. And after we'd returned most of North Africa to U.S. domination, the last being Libya, you might say, where we just rained terror bombing on them for Cynthia was in there doing some of the worst of the bombing for weeks and tore the country up. It's a little country, very prosperous, shared the wealth well, high education standards and everything, but we took them down, left them broken in misery and fighting among themselves now. We've reestablished after a courageous, if very late in the days, a revolution in Egypt, which is bigger than any of these countries by a substantial margin.
Well,
we've turned to military government now, but serious turn has come, and they've been more resilient in their resistance than anybody. They've hung on for 2 years under extremely difficult circumstances with mercenaries and others trying to overthrow the government. It's not that everybody in Syria had been perfectly happy, but if Syria had been let alone, the country had been doing well.
I believe it's always been doing well. My question to you, sir, since you are in the law aspect of it, why aren't we prosecuting these people in our government that are going out there and doing these things? They're setting up these false pretenses to attack other nations.
Well, for one thing, they're our agents. They're acting under our authority. They're economically supported by us, plus what they pick up on the side in the trade. So it'd be pretty hypocritical to turn on them. The real sin is that we don't acknowledge what we do and change what we do because it's inconsistent with every principle the United States has ever declared to be its purpose here on earth. Democratic institutions with freedom and justice for all.
Right, but what about the lying that is done by them? You know, this isn't clear-cut representation of the people or the will of the people to lie about other nations and, you know, create something to go attack them. You know, that's not what we put them in office for.
I hope not, and it's obvious that the vast majority of the public didn't even think about it happening this way, but we've been at it for a long time. If you took our veracity temperature, if we had a thermometer for that, the government's during the Vietnam War, you know, we were deceiving our own people throughout. The Korean War was a tragedy, a deadly tragedy. 60th anniversary, the end of the Korean War. We don't admit it. We lost both of those wars. We lost it because they were unjust and because while the people of those two countries suffered unbearably, they prevailed because they had no choice, really. It was prevail or die. And then we started picking on the Arab countries. And, you know, one after another, those that we couldn't dominate by economic pressures and interests, common interests, oil and things like that. We've any independent country there, we've overthrown by force. I don't know any people that have suffered more from U.S. violence for a longer period of time than the Iraqi people. And even today, you can't go out on the streets without being afraid you're going to get blown up or your kids go to school and the bomb go off and they don't come home. And they've lived under those conditions for years because we decided to take them down. Finally invaded with President Bush in 2003, and since then it's been chaos in most of the country. The part of the population got by for a while without terrible violence, but even the Kurds are catching it now.
Okay. With that being said, we know that there's special interests behind pushing our government to, you know, go after these things. Let's talk about the major drug dealers, the opium pushers. Are they behind a lot of this? Because I know during Vietnam there was opium coming back in body bags. So evidently something was up with that.
Well, if you look at the writings of Professor Peter Dale Scott, who actually is helping me as I work on my PhD, he got involved with what he called, he theorized the notion of the deep state. And it is the deep state that engages in activities that are unknown to the people in that state. And one of the things that he found as he was looking into the assassination of JFK was the role of the drug trade in the U.S. push for war. And so when we hear or read articles about U.S. troops in Afghanistan protecting the poppy fields, that should not come as any surprise, because we continue to be exposed to these aspects of the deep state, these events, these activities of the deep state. The United States is engaged in the illicit drug trade, and we have my former colleague, who is no longer with us, but Congressman from Texas, Henry Gonzalez, who filed impeachment against, articles of impeachment against George Herbert Walker Bush, and he talked about how Wall Street was sent aloft because of money that has been injected into the banks by the drug trade.
Well, yeah, the actually, the late 90s when everything was dried up. We have a question from one of our listeners. He wants to know, his name is Fred from Illinois, and he says, Ramsey, what is the best way through the legal system to take on the lies being told in the official story of the government's 9/11 investigation?
Well, I guess the best way is the one we brag the most about but never fulfill, and that's the democratic process, to elect officials that will insist that our government tell the truth, that insist that it conduct itself as a straight arrow, that does what it says, and what it says is what's good for the country. It's it's the open and honest way if we'll do it. It's not easy because money dominates politics, and money has its own interests, that is the interest of its owners, not the public at large. But if we really want to have a government that's serving our interests, we have to vitalize our democracy. We have to take money out of the political process so that it's one person, one vote, not one vote, $1,000. And that may seem like a pipe dream, but it's the pipe dream we were founded on, and it can be done. If we had universal voter enrollment, which we worked on for years, where the Bureau of the Census would go and enroll everybody, whether they wanted to be enrolled or not. You couldn't force them to vote, but you could enroll them just like you count them in the census, and everybody be able to vote, and maybe they get inspired on election day and go out there and strike a blow for liberty.
Well, that's an interesting notion, universal enrollment. I know in some countries it is the law that people of majority age must vote. I'm wondering, given Ramsey's reference to the influence of money in the U.S. political process, I'm wondering if there were a way that the voters could be less swayed by the 30-second TV and radio spots and actually do investigation of the candidates and not be so accepting of the major candidates. For example, we've got Hillary Clinton now being touted as the next candidate for president of the Democratic Party. Now, this is a woman who went to Libya and crowed about the murder of Muammar Gaddafi. Now, is that somebody, is that the comportment of someone that we want as our president? So maybe, you know, the solution has to rest with the voters, but that means that the voters have an added responsibility to reject candidates that don't reflect their values and not just accept who the money says is the best person for the position.
Well, right. I've always thought that there should be a civilian voluntary oversight committee overseeing the government. Of course, if we let the government get out of our hands, then they're going to do what they want regardless. My next question is from Mike in California. And his question to you is, do you think, Cynthia and Ramsey, that Obama and Israel will eventually go to war with Iran?
You want to try that one, Cynthia? You want me to?
Well, either, we both can, because you know I have a, you know I have a view. But I
no, come on now. Well, it's the last big man standing, isn't it? Assuming that, and Syria's not that powerful anyway, but certainly the final target is in that region, and that concern is Iran. The wrongs we've done that country in my lifetime are just unbelievable. We overthrew Mossadegh, who was democratically elected, and racially demonized him and imposed the Shah, who was our man, who drove the people of the country crazy for 25 years before they couldn't stand it anymore. And Iran accomplished one thing I've never seen in history otherwise. And I was going there every year from 75 through 79, which is the year the Shah left. I was there in a town called Ghazvan the day the Shah left, and the people heard it, and they just went crazy. Everybody's out in the streets. Hallelujah, you know, the millennium had come. But the misery that the Shah imposed on those people was just unbelievable. He had a military force that was vast, more tanks than the British Army. He had Sidewinder missiles, the only other country the United States gave them to. Not even the UK had the Sidewinder missiles. And he used them brutally against his people. He had Savak in every mosque and every office and school and most of the homes in the country. You couldn't hide. It was only by little hand cards that they'd slip in from outside, where Ayatollah Khomeini would send his message of the day in. If you got caught with one of those were going to lose a hand, probably, if not your head. But the people finally, in a nonviolent revolution, marching 1 million on the streets of Tehran and 2 million across the country, weekend after weekend, and a nonviolent revolution, and finally the Shah realized he couldn't, they'd stopped everything in that last winter of, which was a very cold winter of 78, 79. the schools were closed, the businesses were closed, everything was closed. Even it was hard to get food, hard to get heating fuel. And finally, Shaw just got on a plane and flew away with all the money he could pack into it. But his health gave out. And the people have been struggling ever since to find their way, and we've been beating up on them every way we can. But they've done well, and they're strong, and I hope that Iran can endure as an independent nation, not one that's dominated by the U.S. and Israel or our interests and values. It's ancient culture and a wonderful people, and they deserve a right to choose their own destiny.
And I agree with that. And interestingly, just 2 days ago, I was looking at a documentary on the Hittites and the empire of the Hittites, an ancient people. And in this documentary, they were talking about the Persian Empire, and they mentioned that in the Persian Empire, there was religious freedom, cultural freedom, and I found that very interesting because I remembered reading that the Israelis wanted the Iranian Jews to immigrate into Israel, and they refused. They said that they love their lives in Iran. And so that stuck with me when I heard that, because it made me reflect on when I saw this in the documentary, because it made me reflect on the tolerance and the pluralism that was tolerated from ancient times up to now, when you have people who don't want, it's their home and they don't want to leave. And our experience in Syria was, that's the first time I'd ever been to Syria. And so I had heard about the pluralism, the tolerance, but I was able to hear it from people who are Christians, people, they said that it was only during this crisis that they even cared about who was this and who was that, and the army is majority Sunni in Syria, okay. Even though the Assad is Alawite. And so you have people who are trying to live together, and there are other people who want to dominate them, and they want their land, they want their resources, they want to completely dominate them, and so they won't allow people to just live.
I think I know where you're going with that, and we'll be right back on that after we take a short break. Cynthia, stick with us. You're tuning in to the People Speak Radio on the BBS Radio Network. We'll be right back in just a few minutes.
Got questions? The library's got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak, every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
We're back on People Speak with the BBS Radio Network with our guests, Ramsey Clark and Cynthia McKinney. Cynthia, let's go back to where we left off. The culprit. That is trying to take the resources of the other nations surrounding it.
Well, I don't think we should forget the speech that General Wesley Clark made before the Commonwealth Club out in California when he talked about the plan to invade 7 countries in 5 years. And now we see that plan unfolding. Sudan has been dismembered, and the purpose of this is to just totally destroy these countries, to turn them all into Somalias and Libyas. And, of course, Somalia and Libya were on the list. Sudan's on the list. Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, and Syria. And so we're seeing this unfold before our very eyes, but this was told to Wesley Clark back in 2001. And in 1991, Wolfowitz told him that the inaction of the Soviet Union slash Russia for when the United States was engaged militarily in the region in Iraq, that showed, according to, it showed Wolfowitz, this is Wolfowitz talking, that it showed him that the United States could militarily engage in the region without a Russian response. The only reason, in my opinion, that Syria is has withstood the onslaught is because there hasn't been, as Ramsey pointed out, the kind of Libya onslaught with ground troops and bunker buster bombs. You haven't had that in Syria. But it's clear that the deterioration of the Syrian state, what we were told is that there's 15, I believe, provinces, and you've got the mercenaries operating in six of them. So, you know, people are trying to go about their daily lives, trying to act as if the country is not under attack. But Syria is under serious attack. And the only reason that it has been as low-intensity kinetic activity, now that's the new phrase from the Obama White House, has been because of the unprecedented double veto of the Russians and the Chinese at the United Nations. Otherwise, we would be seeing exactly what happened in Libya being visited upon the Syrian people.
Wow, we're overloaded with questions. I'm trying to get through them all. So basically, we are pretty much behind the FSA, and we're pushing this fight in Syria for a certain culprit. We need to move on to another question, Cynthia. People want to know if you were approached to cease and desist the questioning over 9/11 with Donald Rumsfeld. How were you attacked and why?
Oh, my gosh. The attack continues literally up to today.
I know that.
Even when I, you know, it's just like, it was amazing. But I was traveling with Ramsey, so everything was cool. But shoot, for years I've been detained. When I went out of the country and try to come back into my own country, I get detained. And, you know, it's repression. I understand what's going on. I go around the world and I try to speak peace and truth and justice and dignity, and warmongers stop me at the border and don't want me to come back into my own country and make it difficult for me. So I've, you know, aside from just not even being in the Congress, I'd love to be there now and participating in these very important debates and sharing my point of view and doing research and being able to speak out on the floor in the chamber. But you know, that's a price that I pay, but it's not a price that I pay solely because, you know, I'm working on my PhD and hope to be writing my dissertation on Hugo Chavez and, you know, just going on with my life. But the sad thing is that things seem to have stopped, even now that I'm back in Georgia, have stopped for my former constituents, and I can't go anyplace without people saying, look, it's time for you to get back out there. You know, we
yes,
miss
it is.
You. We need you. But so the repression, which is what I call it, it's a kind of soft repression, ridicule, stigma, silencing. And so now it's come to the part of silencing in various ways. But there are many ways that those in power have to deny a platform or deny power to people who won't go along with the program.
Well, Dave in Canada wants to know if either one of you has a comment on Netanyahu's bellicose UN address today. Or have you even heard it?
I've missed it. I haven't had a chance to catch up with it, but I'm probably happier that I didn't. I will
yes.
tomorrow.
Neither have
yeah,
I.
Yeah, and I missed it, too.
His words are not from my follow
habit. Anything he has to say. Okay, Shelley in Missouri wants to know, the government shutdown today, whose fault was it?
Well, how would you like to be in the House tonight, Cynthia? Sitting there having closed the country, the government down. I know. That's real democracy in action, isn't it?
That's right.
Beautiful.
And, you know, here's the thing, though. The voters, I always go back to the voters. I heard a very, very moving speech by a member of the United Kingdom Parliament. He's actually, I think he might be in the House of Lords. His name is Kaufman, Gerald Kaufman. And he was talking about how the voters in Israel didn't really want democracy because they didn't vote for democracy. They voted for candidates who were warmongers. And so ultimately, it's the voters. And so if the voters elect people who are cowardly, you know, you have to do something special to earn my vote. I'm not going to just give my vote away. Because my vote is the only, it's my most precious political asset. My campaign contributions are another political asset that I have. But if I give my vote to someone who doesn't reflect my values, then it's almost like, you know, you're gonna get this, and you deserve this because in the end, there was choice, and the choices were not utilized to their best advantage. I don't know if I'm expressing it in the way that it ought to be expressed, but I hope the audience and
you all
get what I'm trying to say.
Yes, you are. It's up to us to choose the people that are going to do the right job for us.
Exactly. Period. Yeah, you said it so much better.
Okay, let's move on to the next question. Is Obama a war criminal for his bombing of Libya?
Well, it's not just for Libya. He's done a whole lot of bombing. Afghanistan, Pakistan.
Yemen.
Somalia. I have a friend in Somalia. I visit him on Skype two or three times a week. I say, is the United States bombing tonight? And, you know, the answer is they haven't stopped bombing in Somalia. They haven't stopped bombing in Yemen. They're still bombing in Yemen. So,
and yet these people,
the drones
I look forward to the day when we don't have a war criminal as a president.
The drones are an extreme example, though, because they're a form of assassination. You just decide, let's kill this guy or woman, but I haven't noticed any women so far. And you send a drone out there and whap them, and maybe half a dozen other people, including a family of four that was having dinner with them. We've lost all morality and sense of proper action in the government. Some people applaud the drones, but they're a very dangerous innovation in what you could call military science and ought to be prohibited because they're a form of assassination.
So why is the Department of Justice buying drones? Why do we, why are sheriffs, county sheriffs buying drones? I mean,
good way to get rid of your neighbors.
In the search for Chris Dorner. So,
fishing game also.
I think the lessons that we have to learn one of the lessons is that if they will do it abroad, they'll do it at home. So if they will use the drones to kill people abroad, they will do it at home.
We got no more right to kill people abroad than we do at home. We've just got to stop the killing. We have a lot for domination by violence.
And so that means that we have to stop it when it appears. And what I always also say is that they'll test it on a vulnerable, disliked community inside the United States, and then they'll spread it. They were doing body cavity searches on the street in broad daylight of black and Latino men in San Antonio, Texas, gosh, a decade ago. I found out about it. And nothing
happened. San Gonzalez's town.
And now they're doing white women. So
yep.
What I say is, stop it when it's happening to black and brown people, and then you won't have a chance to experience it yourself. But,
well,
you know, these people are very good at dividing people and making it appear that people deserved what they get when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was killed. A poll that was taken at the time, there was a significant number of people who said he deserved what he got. That was because the media had participated in the vilification of Dr. King prior to his murder so that people would say, okay, you deserve what he got. And this is a part of how people have to stop being persuaded just because Wolf Blitzer says it on CNN doesn't make it so.
Well, I think that's the major problem here in the U.S. is that we let the media get away with everything. I have a question from a Winston Smith in Vermont. He wants to know, Mr. Clark, is there any way for citizens to bring a suit against the federal agency for producing a fraudulent report, which is the NIST agency on 9/11 and the collapsing of Building 7?
Yeah, I think there's certainly a legal basis for it. We probably need to try to create some nonprofit groups that make it their business to do that on a priority basis, because the problem is vast and it would require a lot of litigation. But it's one way to try to get what you could call truth in government, which is the only foundation on which you can hope to have a government that's honest.
Okay. And my final question to you is, can we prosecute a president? And this is something I've been working for, and I've been following Vincent Bugliosi in his quest for prosecution of George W. Bush. Can it be done?
Well, certainly the president's under our concept of law, not above the law. If he's a former president, he doesn't have the immunity of the office, but the president himself should probably be impeached first, and then if there's evidence indicating commission of a crime, he ought to be prosecuted for it. That's more important than just equal justice under law. It's integrity in government. If you don't have integrity in government, you're in bad trouble, and we don't have it.
I think the International Criminal Court has answered that question with the indictment thing and over Gbagbo's head of Cote d'Ivoire and Bashir in Sudan and who is someone else that they've... these are... and the current president of Kenya, Kenyatta, all walking around with ICC indictments. And so it can happen, but so far it's been reserved for African presidents.
Right. I thought Sharon was also indicted on that, but never brought to justice.
Sharon, actually, I think you might be referring to the Belgian case, and then they changed. It was brought under universal jurisdiction, and Belgium then changed their law.
The ones that have been brought up are the ones that were enemies of the United States, primarily.
Yes.
We formed special courts for them, in fact. You know, former Yugoslavia and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We've also got the ICJ and the International Criminal Tribunal, and what we do is we pick our enemies and have them indicted.
Yes, that's right.
In the name of international law, but it's not an independent agency seeking truth and justice.
Wow. Well, you know, we definitely need to do another show with you two. You've been a fascinating guest. I'm trying to get the producer to do a follow-up with you.
Okay.
One last question. One last question. And do you think that Israel will ever be prosecuted for its crimes against the Palestinians? Tough question.
Well, it's tough. It's tough only because so far Israel has proved to be above the law, above international law, above international humanitarian law, international human rights law. I mean, you name the law, and it's not subject to them. From the U.S. point of view and from the European point of view as well. So they are able to kill and commit criminal acts with impunity, and they haven't stopped. Netanyahu is a war criminal.
I represented the PLO for about 30 years, and I tell you, Israel's policy was to make their lives so miserable that they'd hope they'd just go away. And they'd round up men, young boys, in some village and put them in trucks and take them 30 miles away from home in a hot summer day and dump them out, humiliate people in every way, and make life generally miserable. But the Palestinians are a hardy tribe, and they've been pushed around badly, and they're almost pushed out of the whole area. But I think they'll overcome because... they've got the courage of humanity that has been persecuted for a long time.
What we need in the United States Congress are members of Congress who are willing to say no to the pro-Israel lobby. That would take us a long way toward correcting some of the mistakes of U.S. policy. If we just had individual members of Congress who were willing to say no and continue to have the support of their constituents.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a hard feat, but I see a slow but consistent waking up of many, many people. What's in it for the United States? What's next? What are their plans on the tyrannistical movement that they're planning? Are they planning maybe some kind of civil war or something of that nature, creating chaos for a civil war so they can reimpose a different constitution? What do you think, Cynthia?
Impose a different constitution. They're doing a pretty good job of ignoring the one that we have already and changing it. So what's in store for the U.S., nothing good as long as we have these psychopaths in office, they're not necessarily in office, but they're able to control the people who are. And that includes psychopaths who are also cold warriors who want the people of the United States to believe that Russia and China are their enemies. So that means that once we finish with North Africa and West Asia, then we're going to go directly into Russia and China and destabilize them. Mm. And that is madness. It's sheer madness. If it was madness in the 1960s, it's more than mad in the 2000s.
Well, I'm sorry to cut you off, Cynthia, but that's the rest of our time. But I do want to have you guys on again. You guys are great. My audience loves you guys, and hopefully we'll have you on soon.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for
Thank
having
you guys.
Time.
Thank you, Ramsey.
Nice
you
wishes,
guys.
Everybody.
Have a good evening. Don't forget to join us next week on the People Speak Radio. We tentatively have Ron Paul scheduled for next week, so be here.
Some people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.